Governor Andrew Cuomo wants to give police officers in New York the legal power to remove firearms from a home after a case of domestic violence. Currently, firearms must be surrendered by someone charged with domestic violence only if the suspect is named in an order of protection or if a judge decides the accused poses a threat to the protected person. The measure has the support of Amy Barash, who served as executive director for the New York State Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence and is now the executive director of the New York City-based group, Her Justice.
We're a nonprofit. We're actually celebrating our 25th year in existence, and we are working in New York City to stand with women living in poverty by training and mentoring volunteer attorneys to help these women with their individual legal needs as well as address systemic legal challenges.
Governor Cuomo, in his state budget, called for a new law that will allow police officers to seize guns in cases of a person charged with domestic abuse, if there are guns in the household, and this person who's been charged owns those guns. There's a similar law under consideration in Vermont, but a lawmaker there wants to give that power only to judges. He's afraid of the constitutionality of allowing police to seize weapons that are not actually evidence in a criminal case. The constitutionality of this, is it clear?
I think that there are a lot of circumstances in which it's constitutionally permissible for law enforcement to take guns at scenes of crimes generally and in domestic violence cases in particular. In fact, that can happen now without a change in the law. And I think I really commend the governor for supporting ways in which to ensure surrender of firearms in domestic violence situations, because we know a lot of research shows that, you know, victims of domestic violence are much more likely to die, to be killed by a firearm if there is a firearm in the home, obviously. We also know that a firearm in the home is correlated with exacerbated violence overall. So I think his interest in increasing the times when we surrender weapons at these scenes makes a lot of sense. I would suggest that a place where we can look more for this work now, even before any legislation passes the New York State Legislature, which passes things with all deliberate speed typically, is to really look at the family court scenario. Typically, the law allows for surrender of firearms in two circumstances in domestic violence, either conviction of a qualifying misdemeanor or at the issuance of an order of protection. And as I'm sure you know, orders of protection can be issued in criminal or family court. When they're issued in family court, those orders are served, delivered to the accused individual by sheriffs. And at that moment in time, if ordered by the judge or given other circumstances occasionally, sheriffs can remove firearms at that time. And I think that would be something we could do now. And we all of us who work in this system, whether civil attorneys like myself and my agency or advocates, law enforcement, judges, everybody could be thinking about appropriate circumstances to get guns out of the home.
Why are some of these cases going to family court? If a person is assaulted, isn't that a criminal offense?
It absolutely can be, but in New York, we have options. Victims can go to either or both places for some charges. And a lot of victims of domestic violence choose to go to family court for a couple of reasons. First of all, they may not want to call the police. They may not want to have their partner or the other parent of their children arrested. They may be uncomfortable participating in law enforcement for a whole host of reasons. Maybe they're afraid of retribution. Maybe they're in a questionable documentation status as a foreign-born individual. They don't want to engage with the police, but they really need that order of protection to reduce the violence in the home. So we have an opportunity in New York State for people to go to family court and get the same kind of order of protection, same force and power that you would have if you got an order out of criminal court.
How effective are orders of protection? It's really just a piece of paper unless it's enforced.
Exactly right. I mean, orders of protection have been shown to be very powerful in changing behavior, but a lot of people will say, for example, an order of protection is just a piece of paper. It can't stop a bullet. And that's exactly why we should be having offenders surrender their firearms when they are subject to an order of protection, because the order of protection can change other behavior. But if you have an armed individual and they're intent on using that firearm, there's very little that is going to stop them.
How long is an order of protection usually in effect? I've heard the complaint that a person is arrested for domestic violence. They're out in 48 to 72 hours, perhaps even shorter if they make bail quickly. So how effective are these orders to keep an abuser away from a home?
Well, the order of protection, as you said, is only as effective as its enforcement, and that enforcement really has to be kind of a collaborative effort. So it's on the victim to call the police if they see the offender coming near them. But the more information law enforcement has, the better able they are they're better able to enforce the orders of protection. So, for example, they did a pilot in California where even after they had a law such as the law that the governor is recommending, they noticed that a lot of firearms were not being surrendered. So before people served the orders of protection, before law enforcement served them, they researched the offenders, not only for licenses for pistols and firearms, but also to see if that offender had been involved in any other gun-involved situation. So the equivalent in New York State might be they could look at our domestic incident report repository, which lists all of the other domestic incidents in which an individual has been involved, and would note whether or not a gun had been involved. That then means when the officer responds, they're much more informed, which is better for everybody. You may have heard recently, just a couple days ago, two officers were killed, I think, in Ohio, responding to a domestic. They're very dangerous situations for law enforcement officers as well as for victims, obviously. So the more important, the more information the law enforcement officers have when they're serving the orders or enforcing the orders, the more likely they can adequately enforce those orders in the first place.
Other than Governor Cuomo's efforts to remove firearms from domestic abusers, what other pieces of legislation regarding domestic abuse are before the legislature right now, and what's their status?
There are always a lot of bills pending, so I'm not going to go through a laundry list, but I think one that's very important addresses, and this is really not domestic violence so much as sexual assault broadly, is it addresses kind of a carve-out for police officers. There's currently a law that says that corrections officers who sexually assault an inmate cannot claim that the inmate consented to that sexual assault, which makes sense, right? If you're incarcerated, you really don't have any power to not consent to behavior. And there's a pending bill that would include, would expand those that description to include all law enforcement officers. So somebody who's under arrest would be deemed unable to consent to activity like that. So I think that's a really important law out there. We're having a national conversation about what consent means. And I think we should all agree that if you have been arrested or incarcerated, you're unable to withhold consent to certain behavior.
Amy Barash, Executive Director of Heard Justice, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.